I can tell you a bit of a story about the soil, and it's, if you can call it soil, it's a bit strange.
There seems to be a deficit of conversations around the whys of living away from the convenience of town, spending precious time on trying to grow your own food when you can just buy it in the shops, and if choosing this lifestyle really is making a difference on our characters and that of our families. Welcome to the Cultivate Podcast. We are passionate about and love having conversations on what impact truly experiencing country living, true education, and agriculture can have on our lives. We hope and pray that by us sharing these conversations with people from all different backgrounds and experiences, that you can feel equipped from the practical advice and inspired by the stories to continue or pick up where you left off.
Welcome back to the Cultivate Podcast. We're so glad that you guys can be joining us today. We have in the room myself, Shanna, we have Ian, and we have our friend Melissa. Yeah, but before we jump into the conversation that we're going to be having, we haven't really been super consistent in the last couple of weeks for several different reasons. But yeah, what's been happening for you, Ian?
I've been in bed with COVID and that was it. I stayed there and I haven't moved.
And that's not funny. That's really sad.
I'm still on the backlog of catch up in everything, basically, since that. But it was a good break in a way.
Yeah. And I think reflecting on that, it's good to be able to take a pause in life sometimes, but it's also good to realize that there's work to do. So, yeah, we're excited. We're super excited to be back recording again. And, yeah, we were talking about this last week. It's like, oh, we get to do another interview. This is actually an exciting part of our week. So, yes, we're very glad you can be joining us in this journey as well. So, yeah, for me, I actually was able to go to our North New South Wales big camp where several thousand people converge for 10 days, I think it is. And I was working there this year, so it was a very busy time. It wasn't really a holiday. But, yeah, we did that, or I did that, and also had the opportunity to share with the young adults. So I was in the 18 plus tent helping out there in the evenings, able to share about the podcast and different things with the group there. And yeah, just the response was really positive. And it was just cool to see that there were other people passionate about these sort of topics. And I think, like we've talked about it before, like sometimes it feels like we might be the only ones experiencing this or trying to live out these ideals. But yeah, when you open up the conversation, when you let people know that that's what your passion is and that's what you're excited about, then you get to see that there's so many other people that are, you know, grappling with these questions and asking them and moving towards the ideal and living that out to the best of our ability. And so that's just really exciting to be able to connect with other people like that. So it was definitely a highlight for me.
Yeah, absolutely. There's plenty. We just got to connect with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's why we're excited for everyone who joins us on social media or listens to our podcast. We're just super grateful that you can be here, not just listening to us, but yeah, when you reach out to us and connect with us and yeah, we can have that community and we can really just be able to encourage each other, right? Cool. So without any further ado, we would like to introduce you all to our friend Melissa. So I met Melissa back in, I think it was 2015, right, Mel?
Yeah, I think it was, which is coming to a few years ago now, amazingly.
Yes. Now, we met at a literature evangelism program where we were selling Christian books door to door, and it was around where you lived, Melissa, and we got to get to know each other and hang out, and actually we spent the whole 6 weeks knocking on doors together. We were buddies in that, which was really fun. But I remember getting to go to your place around that time, and I was just amazed. So we drive, like it's not far from Kingscliff, Tweed Heads area. And we drive to her place and there's everything there, like amazing garden. There's fruit trees, there's avocado trees, there's, you know, anything you could think of, and fertile soil. You look to the hill and there's like gardens over there and market gardens happening and, you know, fruit stalls and vegetable stalls. And anyway, I was super excited seeing that. It's like, oh, there's a country girl. We connect on so many levels and they have an awesome place that we can just hang out at. So yes, that was one of my first introductions to Mel. Is that how it always was? Were you always living there, Mel? How did that all start?
No, we weren't always living there, but we probably moved there at the best time in my life, I think. Mm. I was, might have been 12 when I moved there. So I spent my teenage years on the farm, And I had cousins next door. I'm an only child, unfortunately, but yeah, my aunt and uncles lived on the same property. And my grandma and grandpa, we were all together, had so much fun running around and picking fruit. My grandma and I did a lot of fruit picking together. And every time I talk to her, she says, "Oh, where's my fruit picker? I've got pecans all on the ground."
Aww.
But I actually visited home recently and it's incredibly lush down there, right? Because they've had so much rain in North New South Wales. We've seen it, you know, on the news, the flooding. But the garden is really loving it. Found a pawpaw tree that had, we estimated 70 pawpaws on it. I'll have to send you a picture. Yeah, it's incredible. I've never seen something like it. So the rain was good for some things.
Yeah, there's always positives when it comes to the weather patterns, right?
Mm-hmm. Balance.
Yeah. No, that's really cool. So what was like your first memory? That was obviously you moved there when you were 12. Did you do much gardening then, or were you mainly just getting fruits of what had already been planted? What did that look like?
Yeah, there wasn't it actually used to be a sweet potato farm. I rented out. Yeah. So we converted that into paddocks. So that was a lot of took a fair bit of time picking up rocks, chucking in the trailer, and then we planted out fruit trees and made a little garden patch from there. Yeah.
So what were some of the fruit trees that you started with?
Yeah, there's so many, hey. Avocados, mangoes, citrus, pawpaw, passion fruit, star fruit, pecans, chocolate pudding fruit, custard apples, macadamias.
This is making me hungry.
Wow. And I think you can do that, right, because that climate is just in the perfect place. It just grows everything.
Yeah, it's volcanic soil, so it's bright red. And, yeah, like what you said earlier, really good growing region. I've started to get my own personal interest in it after a while. I was the garden superintendent, I guess. But, yeah, looking back to when I was younger, my very first memories of gardening were probably with my grandparents. My Nana was very into ornamental gardening and she always had a well-kept garden. But I remember she was very strict about her pest control. And for me as a young girl, I didn't understand that. I was quite sensitive and she was very harsh against snails. She'd spot a snail and quickly pull it out from the bushes and stamp her foot down on it. It didn't even have a chance. And I remember protesting quite loudly about that. And, and even hiding them from her at times.
Let's save the snails.
Yeah. Unfortunately, now as I'm older and have had my own personal gardening experience, I understand why you must kill things, but yeah, I didn't back then.
So she didn't necessarily explain the reason why they had to go. It was more just, well, this is dangerous, get rid of it.
She did say, she said they could just go and live in anyone else's yards. They could live next door, but if they came into her property, well, that was just too bad for them. That was what she told me anyway.
So funny as kids how we're just like, but we like it all. Why can't we have it all? Not realizing that, they kind of don't work together normally.
Yeah.
You obviously don't live there anymore. When did you sort of move away from there and what has been, the journey there for you guys? Because you're married now as well, right? So you left home when you got married and, is gardening still a part of your life? Is it not so much part of your life?
Yeah, it is. I'm really grateful for how God has allowed us to be living on country properties all the way through, even though we haven't planned for it. So for, maybe a year, a bit more than a year, we were living down in Victoria on a health retreat property, which you both know about. We were there together.
Yeah.
It was lots of fun.
Yeah, some good gardening experience there and freezing cold weather. Then we've changed into the very much the opposite up in, the subtropical anyway, and it's so hot up here.
Quite a contrast from Victoria, right?
Yeah, so we were living, we had snow back down in Victoria, but here we've had a oppressive heat and humidity. So it's a totally different different climate, different things to grow. Oh yeah, we've had a nice treat of mangoes recently and longans. So yeah, starting to learn about more of the tropical side of things, and you can grow summer vegetables all the year round. So don't need a hot house.
That's useful.
Yeah.
So yeah. You start off in like the Northern Rivers area, which is like a very distinctive place for growing things. And then you're in Victoria, and I know you are semi-involved in the garden down there as well, which is again super different climate. And then now you're all the way up in Queensland. What are you finding between the different climates? How did you go between the two? Was that an easy progression, or has that been challenging figuring out how it all works?
Yeah, it has been challenging, but it's been a good learning process, I suppose. So I did a fair bit of research into what actually can I grow here, because I don't want to put in the effort and then find it fail. But yeah, I learned that you can grow a lot of good things. Like there's a lot of good summer vegetables, like tomatoes, zucchinis, eggplants, you know, the ingredients for a good ratatouille, for example.
Yes.
Yeah. Another thing, I think there's a lot more pests here because of the heat. They just seem to grow really rapidly. Like we've had pests in our cupboard, issues with pantry moth. That's a different a different story. But yeah, outside pests as well. A lot more than when I lived around the Northern Rivers. I'd grow things down there and they'd get a few holes, but up here I've had some entire plants devoured. But it's a good learning experience. Yeah,
no, that's interesting how it's so different, hey? But again, it just makes you have to do the experiments and, oh, that didn't work, what can I do next time to fix that and to change that and to be an investigator and, you know, work through these sort of issues.
Yeah.
Snow in the context of Victoria, snow is a great insect killer. So it cleans up, it cleans your pests at least, and you can start clean.
That's true. But you don't really get the snow up there, do you, Mel?
No, definitely not.
So you and Jalen just recently moved to another country place, so the country place you're now at in Queensland. When was that? That was a couple months ago, right?
Yeah, it was actually in November.
Okay.
Yeah. We've done a bit of house sitting and probably January we settled here.
Okay, nice. So a couple of months you've been there, and I've already seen some pretty cool photos of what you've been doing up there in your garden. But tell us and tell the people listening in, what was the garden situation when you first arrived up there, and what did you have to work with?
Sure. As you're saying, we're currently staying at someone else's place temporarily. They did have a garden that had been left to go a little bit wild over summer, probably. The owners don't usually do much in it over summer because they think it's a bit too difficult with the humidity and pests and so forth. But there were a couple of beds established. So there were about three beds over to one side of the house and another couple on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And grass and weeds covered the most of the beds. There were some old plants in the ground too, so lots of spindly little carrots that hadn't developed properly, and they probably stayed in the ground too long, and old tomato plants that had some kind of disease on them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's what it was like when we came here. But I had a little bit of spare time on my hands, so decided I would give it a shot.
Nice. And I love it when things like that are achievable. Like there's already semi-foundation there. Well, yeah, you've got some beds you can work with. Obviously, when there's grass growing, you've still got something to do. But, it makes it more achievable, right, when you're going into something that's already semi-established. So
Yeah.
It's exciting. So when you got there, what was your first step? So you see there's potential there and you're like, okay, so what was the first step I'm going to do to work on this, and what am I going to plant, and how am I going to decide what I'm going to plant? What was that process like for you?
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, the first step was pretty much old-fashioned weeding. So,
yes. A lot of hard work, right?
Yeah, it did pay off though. Like now I'm really grateful for it. Because some of it was to weed by hand, but some of it, yeah, really had to get the hoe behind. some weight behind it. Yeah, it was a bit harder because it'd been left to go at a stage where the grass was taking root. I think it's easiest to try to keep on top of things rather than to come back, let it go and then come back later.
Mm-hmm.
But I tried to make a nice clean edge around the beds using a shovel just to separate the beds from the lawn around to try to maintain that separation a bit easier. And that's been really helpful. Now I can just regularly hoe around the edges and it makes maintenance that much better.
Nice. So thinking ahead like that is so important doing this sort of stuff, right? Because, you know, you could have just been like, oh, I'm just going to do the bare minimum and I'm just going to, you know, just pull out what I can so I can plant something else there. But then that makes it hard in the long run. So, yeah, forward thinking, thinking ahead. I really like seeing people do that.
Yeah, it's easy just to want to do just the surface stuff, the appearance, but when you get the roots, it pays off over time. Yeah, so I use cardboard to cover those areas of the garden that weren't needed or to help make some paths between some of the beds, just a quick weed killer.
Mm-hmm.
So after it was weeded, we noticed the garden beds were quite depleted down low. So usually they replenish their soil regularly. The natural soil here is clay and it's really hard and solid. So it does hold good nutrients, but it's easy to get waterlogged and it doesn't really have much organic matter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to give ourselves a good foundation, we imported some soil in and added it to what was already there.
Nice. I have heard a few people that do that just because, like, when you're working with clay, it's just so hard to spend the time to rework it to make it more usable. And so sometimes it's easier initially just to bring stuff in to, build on it. Yeah.
Yeah. I can tell you a bit of a story about the soil and it's, if you can call it soil, it's a bit strange.
Yeah.
The property owners helped me organize it because it is their place. We're just kind of looking after it temporarily for them. And they'd used this mix to make their soil before. So there's a big meat processing area in the local district. So it's really known for the beef industry, lots of farms around here. Your big meatworks factory processes cattle. I don't really like to think about what happens there, but ultimately there's a lot of parts of the cow that don't get used for human consumption.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes what's inside of their stomachs and it's a material called perch and it's a bit gross, but it's pretty much just partially digested grass that's on the way to becoming compost. And this farmer down the road, he just gets truckloads of it and it's really just a waste product, but the farmer sells it on to other companies who mixes it with sand and other components and sells it at a premium as a good soil mix. But anyway, we were able to get some of this material very cheaply. It was like $35 for a full trailer load and add it to the garden beds, what was already there, mix it in. So I'm not sure if I'd do it again, but it's great to make use of the resources in the local area. Like that's something that I think is valuable.
Mm.
But, yeah, with this material, I think it would have needed to compost a little bit more. Like that would have been best because it can be a bit dry sometimes.
Okay. Yeah. I've never heard of that before, but that's really cool. I love resourcefulness and I love that it's cheap and you're being frugal. So it's much cheaper than mushroom compost. I know people have used that, which is also a very good product and definitely recommend for certain situations. But if you're trying to, be frugal, save money, be resourceful, then go for options that are around you. That's awesome.
A lot of these composting facilities got set up just because of these waste products, basically, that they were available and they're like something had to be done with it and then they made compost. Voila.
We have a useful product, which is awesome.
Yeah. It's probably in a lot more, soil mixes that you buy at the shops than what we realize.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just go straight to the source and add it in.
it wasn't the nicest property to visit. There were like birds of prey flying around his piles of dirt. But yeah, it's interesting.
So you have your soil more prepared now. While you're preparing the soil, did you know what you were going to plant already? Or did you decide that after you sorted it out?
No, I decided before, and then the owners helped me organize the soil. So I got my hands on several books and just tried to determine what would grow best in this area in this summertime, because I didn't have any idea. So I just tried to figure out on Australia whereabouts, were we in the climate zone, which is subtropical, and what plants would be suitable. Mm-hmm. Like I said, chose a lot of Mediterranean vegetables.
Yum.
Which I was quite pleased with. Oh, yeah, I also wanted to try to protect against pests as much as possible. So mm-hmm. I learned about companion planting, and that's the planting different plant species next to each other, which have been shown to have beneficial effects. For example, marigold is one a lot of people might have heard of, a helpful garden companion. It produces chemicals that suppress disease-causing agents in the plants around, and they smell quite strongly, and it's meant to repel pests.
Does that go with any plant, or does that go specifically with another plant?
They did have a list of good. I kind of just planted them around some of the edges of the beds and with the tomato plants, because I was really hoping the tomato plants would go well.
Yes.
Because the owners were telling me how they've tried to grow big varieties of tomatoes in the past and they weren't. So
I have a soft spot for tomatoes. I love tomatoes.
Mm.
Is it working? Are the marigolds helping? Or?
It's hard to say. I think they have helped, but not completely eradicated pests.
Mm-hmm. Which is, it's normally how it works though with natural things, right? Like it doesn't, it's not like a hard kill everything sort of attitude. It's a more organic sort of way of dealing with it.
Mm, yeah. We actually visited a permaculture farm too recently, which was really inspiring. They do a lot of, it's more of a philosophy of growing things, but yeah, they do a lot of mixed planting. So they won't just have one row of strawberry plants, for example. They'll intersperse it with other plants that will bring the right bugs or bring shade. And yeah, it's really interesting learning about the different ways you can do things. Maybe harder to do on a commercial level, but on a home gardener level, you can do things like that, and it makes the garden beautiful too.
Yeah. No, I'm keen to learn so much more about the different methods that are around, hey, like the permaculture, the horticulture, all that sort of stuff. So it's cool to be able to experiment with that and see how other people are doing it and implement the things that are working. And
yeah.
It's exciting.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. So you've got things you're going to plant. You've started planning them out. You've got your soil sorted. And has it been smooth sailing, or have there been any challenges specifically that have come the way?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, challenges, learning curves. I guess that even though I have done a lot of gardening, there's always still more to learn. Mm-hmm. I started a lot of the plants in trays. I thought that might be best, try to keep them away from the full sun, because it was really hot here in midsummer, and I just thought they're going to wither. They can't handle this.
Yeah.
But actually, a lot of the plants I ended up doing direct planting in the soil, some of them ended up being more healthy than the ones that I planted in the seedling trays.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I later learned that there's some plants that really don't like their roots being disturbed. I think cucumbers and zucchinis came under that list. Okay. And same with lettuce as well. When I direct seeded those, they did a lot better. And it saved time too.
Plants are actually so much more resilient than we give them credit for, hey?
Maybe I was just thinking about Victoria and how we did a lot of seedlings inside because they'd freeze.
But yeah. The ones that come up naturally are so vigorous, so strong, and so ready to go. And then we try every imaginable thing in the nursery to try to make them equally vigorous, and they're not.
Yeah.
The way God created them sometimes is just best, right?
Yeah.
Well, actually, always best.
The sun, the heat was like a real thing though. even though they were summer vegetables that I was going to protect the plants. We ended up salvaging some old shade cloth and made little shade shelters for the beds. And I think that was really their saving grace. Mm. It just minimized the intensity of the light. And speaking to other gardeners around here, yeah, they always grow stuff under shade cloth in the heat of summer here.
Yeah, and it makes sense though, because it is kind of crazy hot up there and for a long period of the day, right?
Yeah, long days and hot. And we did have some beds, we didn't have enough shade cloth, some beds that were left exposed, and all my little seedlings, they died, the ones that were out in the full sun.
So which ones grew better in the heat? Like, were there some that were more sturdy than others, or?
Yeah, I probably didn't have enough range to be able to figure that out. I just know I had my little baby cap, like I couldn't cover my baby capsicum bed. There were some other things in there, nasturtiums, that, yeah, anything that I had in that bed failed.
Well, now you know next time, right, that we need more shade cloth.
Yeah, for sure. And that's just learning about the climate. And yeah, the pests, they were a big one. There's these 28 spot ladybugs. They're big yellow ladybugs that have many more spots than the normal red kind. So the red ones are good, but these yellow ones, I've learnt, are not. Really like the eggplant leaves. So despite my natural aversion to killing things, I've been, yeah, squishing them a fair bit. So the adults sit on top of the leaves, and the larvae, which are yellow and hairy, they hide under the leaves. And when
I didn't know what the babies look like, or the seed eggs is what I'm looking for, what the eggs look like, but that makes sense.
Yeah, well, they're the larvae, yellow and hairy. The eggs are quite small.
Okay.
But, yeah, when I was really consistent with that, doing them every day, the plants grew back amazingly. Mm-hmm. just required that consistency.
Oh, that's a lot to go there and pick out the bugs every day. It is,
yeah, when you've got other things to do.
And stars for commitment, Mel.
Well, I didn't keep up with it, but when I was doing it, it was really good.
But I think especially in the formative seasons, like knowing like when it's in its biggest growth spurt, if you're more intentional in those times, and that gives it, it grow further in that first stage, which sets it up.
Yeah. When their leaves are bigger now, they have, you know, they have holes on them, but it's okay. Mm. Like the plant's got lots of leaves. So the those as well, they were another story. So I was very proud of my cucumber plants. I'd made these trellises using old bits of metal, and there's a big bamboo patch, so I raided bamboo stalks for them to climb up.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I'd take away a few of the caterpillars, but within about 2 weeks they'd overrun the plants, and they were even eating the cucumber fruits. Yeah, I did try a natural pest repellent spray, trying to look up some chili powder mixed with vinegar, but I think it might have been a bit too late at that point. Like 2/3 of the plant was already gone, and there was already heaps of caterpillars. So in the future, I'd like to look into alternative methods of pest control and maybe intervening early on in the story before things get out of hand. Have you heard of BTK, Ian? It's a biological insecticide.
Yeah, the BT, which is basically a bacteria that you're spraying on the leaves, and the idea is whatever is eating the leaves, it goes into the gut, and then it eats the insect of whatever description from inside out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it can, but it can work quite well. But it does need to eat a bit of your leaf, and you need to have a bit of that stuff on the leaf.
So need to have some to sacrifice.
You need to sacrifice. You have to have some leaf to sacrifice still.
Okay, because it still sounded like a natural thing, because it's present in the soil naturally, and it doesn't harm mammal guts. So I thought, oh yeah, I should look into that or other such ones.
No, it's a great discovery, and there are other things like it, but that's the biggest, most well-known one.
Okay.
Yeah, there's just so much around it, hey, trying to figure out what to do when it comes to pests, because there's many, like even just listening to you now, like I mean, I haven't stopped to think about the pests that are around, but like you've just mentioned, like what, three or four already of like some of the major ones that are disturbing and making life a little bit challenging for your garden. And yeah, there's so many things that's like, okay, we're fighting against these. We're not fighting against, but trying to live with them and succeed in that. And so that requires some thought into what do we do to fix this problem?
Yeah, if we didn't have pests to deal with, gardening would almost be a breeze, I reckon.
Literally, right?
Yeah. I could even say that watering has been a bit of a challenge up here. Mm. It's actually been unusually dry, maybe because South Queensland and New South Wales have had more than their normal amount of rain. I don't know, and we've correspondingly missed out.
So is it a lot less rainfall than normal, or you're not sure because you haven't been?
It has been, yeah, from what other people have told me. I was putting a lot of time every day or second day to water the plants, especially when they were young, and it was just quite inconvenient at times. So I'd like to explore maybe the use of a drip system or just a split sprinkler so I don't have to stand there so long. I've figured out, yeah, the sprinkler thing, but I could have multiple sprinklers going at once. That would be great.
Yeah.
Mulching has helped.
To keep the moisture in?
It has, yeah, and help for weed control.
True. Benefits in many areas.
Yeah. One bad thing about the mulch, though, is that toads like to burrow in the mulch, and then when I water, they jump out and give me a fright.
I was at Mum's garden. She's in South Queensland, and walking down the road, they had like plastic on some of the beds, and like they burnt holes into the plastic for the plants to grow up and like to keep the weeds out in the bed. Anyway, I was walking down the bed, and like toads are jumping out of them. I'm just like, ah, I can't deal with this. So, yes.
They might be our friends, though, the toads, eating some of those pests.
Well, I thought for a moment you might say we can compost them, but never mind.
I think they have a purpose. I agree with you that they have a purpose, but I don't love frogs jumping out at me. So, yes.
Not unexpectedly.
Cool. So there's been obviously a couple challenges you've had to work through in China. Yeah, navigate that and make that work well. What about like some blessings or some super positive things that have just been like, yes, this is worth it. This is why I do gardening.
It's been great to be able to, yeah, even though there are challenges, you always do have a return for your labor. Some things in life you put in effort and you don't get what's proportional to your effort. But in gardening, you do to some degree, unless there is a major disaster. But yeah, it's definitely linked with the amount of effort you put in, and it's been a blessing to be able to work hard and see results, and not just see them, but enjoy them,
actually taste the results.
Yeah, and share them with others. And a homegrown food is really tasty, and great knowing how healthy it is, fresh. So we have been enjoying a lot of sweet cherry tomatoes recently, so that's been one of more of our long growing crops. It's taken a while for them to bear fruit. Yeah, definitely great reaping the rewards. Another blessing, a benefit I've found, is being able to get exercise through gardening. So definitely had some good muscle soreness after a few days when I worked especially hard, just like I'd gone through a gym and done a workout for my upper back, but I hadn't left home.
I love that. It's a cheap gym, hey?
Yeah, and you're doing something productive, and the exercise is just a benefit on the side without having to think about it or go out of your way. Yeah, and like I said, I've learned a lot through reading, through applying, and even through the mistakes and disappointments. So I've got different ideas to try next time. And if we do this year after year, working with the land in a variety of ways, we're just going to keep learning and growing, and God is going to teach us. And we don't have to be discouraged by the failures.
Yeah. I love that verse in James chapter 1, verse 5. It says, if any man lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all men liberally and upbraids not. And Yeah, it's that principle, right? When like God's so willing and ready to teach us and to give us wisdom and to give us knowledge. And yeah, we can ask, like we can learn, we can go out of our way and learn and read books and experiment and try things, but we can also ask when we feel like we don't have, yeah, all the answers. So it's awesome, hey?
Yeah. Yeah, there's lots of spiritual realities that are evident in the garden. So I guess one that's been really, that I've been blessed to speak to me is the idea of praying and working and how they're both to be a part of our experience. So, you know, in the garden I could do everything in my power to prepare the soil, to fertilize and water, and yet, you know, I realized nothing could happen apart from the life-giving power of God that you know, makes the seed transform and grow.
That always blows my mind, hey? Like, you know, can I just work harder? Can I just, like, you know, prepare the soil better or whatever? Like, ultimately, like, the seed in itself has something that we can't do anything about.
Yeah. So we do a part, but there's definitely a part we can't do. Mm. And that's what God has to do for us. But it doesn't mean that, you know, we don't try. he can't really bless my efforts if I haven't put forth any efforts, if you know what I mean. Mm. There's nothing for him to bless. So I've been learning that in all things we need to work hard, but also rely on the power of God to give us success at the same time and realize our dependence upon him.
I love that tension, like trying to find that tension.
Yeah, yeah. For example, like, that would imply it. So my husband and I were planning for a health outreach, running a depression recovery program. And just today we've been, you know, running around, driving town, trying to find places to put out big signs for people to be aware of what's happening. And also I've been going to various businesses throughout the week and talking to individuals. So, yeah, we were working, but then we're also praying that God would use what we'd done to draw people's eyes to the advertising we'd put out there, use the website and the conversations to make our work actually worthwhile.
Mm.
I wrote this little quote from the book Desire of Ages, which is a fantastic spiritual book on the life of Christ. I wrote it on our prayer board to just remind us of what we need to remember in everything that we do. It says, "Only the work accomplished with much prayer and sanctified by the merit of Christ will in the end prove to have been efficient for good." Hmm. So it was those two things. It was prayer, it is prayer, and the righteousness of Christ, his ability, his goodness, his life, those two things alone can make any of our efforts profitable. So it's been fantastic to learn those lessons from the garden, how it's the power of God and the human effort to be combined and being applied as well.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just on your example of like going out to put the flies there, like, you know, how sometimes we're like, oh, we just need to pray more or whatever. But like, if you had have just sat at home and just kept praying, like no one would have known that you were even running a program. So it's kind of essential to like at least put the word out there, right?
And same
with the garden. Like you go to the garden, you know if you just watch it, like the seeds aren't just going to come from nowhere, like someone's got to put the seed in the ground. So it's like doing our part, but also realizing that, you know, God can actually fill in the lack. So, you know, we can do as much as we can, but the percentage that we can't get the rest of the way, then yeah, God will fill in that lack, which is so cool. It's like it's a cooperation, right?
Mm, yeah. And sometimes I think God doesn't have to use us really, because he's God. He could do things, you know, if not all things, without us lifting a finger. But we must get a blessing by operating with him, I guess. Yeah.
He can plant his own garden if he wants one.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, he did.
But then Adam and Eve, they were given the job, weren't they, to tend and cultivate it. Maybe expand it as well.
Mm. Well, because he actually trusts us and he wants us to be involved in what he's involved in.
Mm, yeah, get the satisfaction, the joy. Yeah.
Mel, you don't sound like a stranger to the concept of praying for the garden. And I know from speaking to some people that some people I was helping with their garden, and I walk into their garden now a year later and they've turned this desert into an oasis, and it And it is a promise. And I just look at the work that they have done does not equate one bit to the amount of success that they've achieved when they've come to their garden in that, with that prayer. And I'm just wondering, like, have you had any experiences or those sort of things where you're kind of seeing things happening that are a little bit beyond just putting your bid in?
Yeah, it's a good question. I was really praying for the pests to stay away, and maybe because I listened to a story recently. It was like a missionary story about this child who had so much faith in God with the Bible verse about when you give your tithe, God will rebuke the devourer. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking,
Malachi 3:10.
That God's word is true, but it didn't. God doesn't always rebuke every single pest, but we did have a good harvest of a lot of zucchinis before the plants went, and I wasn't disappointed, I suppose. I didn't see any big miracles, but lots of God's care.
I had to ask just in case.
But I think those small blessings, those small accumulated blessings, is a massive thing, really. And so many times we overlook them and we don't notice them. But like God's trying to speak to us in all his ways, like, hey, I'm answering. Hey, I'm here. Hey, did you see this? Did you see this harvest? Did you see this blessing? And like, I know in my life there's been times where I've totally just ignored it. It's like, well, there's nothing big happening, so is anything happening? But like within the small things that are being accumulated, like there are big things happening. But yeah, we're so easy to like turn a blind eye to that sort of stuff. No, I'm actually really appreciating reflecting on that. Like, yes, there has been a good harvest. There has been, veggies come out of that garden that can be used for yourselves and to bless other people. And like that in and of itself is amazing and a miracle, which is so awesome just to be able to think back on the hard work and the effort and the labor and the season and see that God has done that sort of stuff for us.
Yeah.
There is a quote in Ellen White in Steps to Christ. I can't give you the page, and it's a slight paraphrase, but pick the roses off the thorn bush. And it's in reference to what you were saying, Shannon, in a sense, we got to come in and pick the harvest, the good things, and collect them and share that abundance and avoid the thorns rather than getting stuck.
Is that the
stuck in the thorns, stuck in the problems?
Yeah.
Stuck in the insects.
Is that the gather the roses quote?
It probably is.
But yeah, it's like focusing on the flowers, focusing on the blessings instead of on the thorns and the trials and the circumstances that don't seem pleasant.
Yeah.
Definitely a big thing in that. So thank you so much for your time, Melissa, and just spending this time with us and sharing your story with us. I've really enjoyed it. Just as in closing, just one last question. What are some key takeaways you would like to leave with those listenings? Any main thing you just want whoever listened to this to be the thing they take away and be like, yes, I can go forward.
Well, for anyone who's wanting to get into gardening more, I'd really just to start, I recommend getting your hands on some good resources, some books with pictures, websites, also reading other people's success stories. That's really inspiring just to get that motivation to see, if someone else has done that, maybe I can too. Yeah. And once you have that motivation to start, it's easier to keep tending what you've already got, because garden becomes your own. It's something you've invested in and you want to see it thrive.
What's your best resource recommendation?
I've really just loved some good books. Good Australian books.
Mm-hmm.
One's going through each vegetable on what they specifically need, so I can quickly refer to the one that I want to grow or that it's the right season for growing. I found those kind of ones helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Just simple things. And another thing I'd like to leave with everyone is, you can remember that gardening isn't an education process, like we were talking about before. And, you know, failure doesn't mean the end of everything. And in fact, it can even be a stepping stone to further growth and, you know, receiving much better harvest in the future, or just saving yourself time. You don't have to be discouraged if your plans are changed, and they probably will be changed. And God can teach us through all of those things. And it's great to be able to have an education from the garden, and that we can learn together and encourage each other. So don't give up, keep going.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing. Let's not give up. Let's keep going and grow more gardens for God's glory.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I enjoyed speaking with you both.
Thanks, Melissa, for adding that story and adding out the perspective of learning, and that we're in a classroom in the garden, and we can learn and keep learning, and let's not jump out of the classroom just because there's a few challenges.
Yeah, there's probably more grades to advance to, right?
That's it.
I like these analogies.
Thanks for listening to the Cultivate podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you find us on Instagram, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to our mailing list by the links below so you don't miss out. And if you have a moment, we'd love it if you could leave a review or tell a friend. See you next time.